Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Oh boy. A very good Friday. Race fans. Oh my God. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online, and why is this man laughing? As Esquire famously asked. You know how everybody has certain what they consider, you know, superpowers. I've always, if I wake up in the middle of the night, or even sleep, you know, normally, and wake up, you know, early in the morning, like a normal person, I'll know immediately what I know what time it is. I might have made a good jock, although I was about 120 pounds, you know, in sixth grade. I'm one of those kids that they put behind the plate and, you know, they made me a catcher because I, you know, in farm league and little league because I was bigger. And then next thing I knew, everybody shot past me. I was one of those kids that maybe your mother would take you to, the department store, the G Fox, you know, the Husky section. It was there. Looking back, what was more humiliating than being directed to the Husky section? The next level down was the Malamute section. Anyway, I took a late shower as I usually got in the shower about 8:57 or 47, and I said, all right, I'll be good. And next thing I know, I went to go look at the clock, and it was 8:59. I'm like, oh my God. So I'm not wearing pants. you might hear the jingle of the belt. All right, there we go. All right, let's get. I hope you're as amused as I am, as Andy says all the time. Nobody laughs at my jokes like me. The weekend preview, and I was so organized too this morning. I was like totally out in front of it. I put out the listing already for the week. Although I forgot Seth Merrill later. Unbelievable. Oh, and the computer's dead. Unbelievable. It's all falling apart. 30 seconds in. Let me tell you what we got going. It's a great weekend. Hollywood Derby weekend. A lot of people, I imagine, you know, it's one of their favorite races. And was really glad that actually that they, what'd it take, about maybe a year before they... I think it was, they put like a sponsor put their name on it the first year away from Hollywood. But then cooler heads prevailed, as they say. And the next thing you knew, it was back to being the Hollywood Derby, which is great. And, of course, the Matriarch on Sunday as the Del Mar, bing, Crosby season wraps up. Brad Free. Free as the wind blows, free as the grass grows, because he's Brad Free. He'll join us in about 10 minutes or so. We'll get Brad's opinions on the weekend. Scott Shapiro will cruise in. Scott's going to focus on Turfway this winter, he was telling me yesterday, which is good. Which is good to have a, because the meet is going to be a lot of fun. I think we've established that in our conversations this week, kicking off earlier on Wednesday with Tyler Picklesheimer, and off they go. In fact, yesterday, that card at Turfway, You had, you know, a few more prices. You had a 10-to-1 or a 12-to-1, I think, and a $20 horse, but it's not mayhem, at least so far. But still that variety. I got the charts here. You had winners yesterday out of Indiana, Keeneland, Kentucky Downs, Aqueduct, Belterra, Indiana again. In fact, three Indiana winners out of eight. But it's a heady mix of horses from all points on the compass. So Scott Shapiro today, and I do want Scott, you may have seen the weekend preview graphic, very snazzy graphics, thanks to the Twin Spires team, thanks to Blaze and the art department. but the Turfway daily double down. So we'll get promotion details from Shap as well. Callie Francois. That's Miss Francois to you. She will swing through. I do want to look at those two very good Maryland Juvenile Championship races. So Callie will give us a glance at those two races. Marcus Hirsch, top of hour two, Daily Racing Forum's game plan. Marcus has picked out three interesting races to discuss, and we'll probably get an update from him on everything going on. Little fairgrounds, maybe even a little Hawthorne. Which we have, you know, one thing I did not get done this week was the Hawthorne contest. I completely let that slip through the cracks, but I saw the Mustaris were like a rash on that leaderboard. Dave Grenick. And this is traditionally a very, you know, this is always a very emotional visit. So very typically the last visit of the year for DRF Grenick. As he says, talk to you in April. that's usually his big send-off. Scully will be through as well. Obviously with Dave, we'll talk the Cigar Mile card. Really good. Should be good. I ended up looking at races 5 through 10 for tomorrow. I'll probably write that up before I fly to Arizona. Scully, do a little last second Friday push. See what he's got. Scully with it. Scully had a nice, very clever, well-built ticket we talked about last week, right? Behind Hoosier Philly. That very simple approach. Finding a late runner, you know, sort of like a, you know, sort of like we talked, in fact, in Philly this week with the sort of a reverse tri-key with a big price underneath. Nick Tamaro, top of hour three. We'll get Nick's Aqueduct looks. Hammer will swing through. Looking forward to seeing Hammer at Arizona. He's an alumnus, a distinguished alumnus. And Seth Murrow to close out the morning, even though I forgot to put Seth on the list of attendees. We pushed Seth. Seth was stuck in the green room both Wednesday and Thursday. So there you go. The other result from yesterday we should slip in here before I start to think about bringing Brad Free forward. The fairgrounds carryover, and it very formful. I looked like I think I ended up paying a little under 600. There was one horse that was actually pretty tricky in there. The horse of Shane Wilson's, Fiery Playboy, in that allowance race, wire to wire, and just kept fighting off Mitch Merrill and the Steve Flint trainee. Feisty Fist. Fiery Playboy and Feisty Fist. So there you go. But other than that, it was very formful. You had 7-to-2 winner, even money entry mate. In fact, that was a horse that we discussed with. There was a bunch of winners yesterday from earlier in the week, right? Brad Cox, the Alice look, even money as part of the entry. And I forgot to mention the Stidham winner at Turfway last night at a nice price. So, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. So it's actually, I think everybody that visited that we talked about a horse, I think, had a winner, right? that had a starter. And then, of course, we're watching for Glatt, who's involved through the weekend at Del Mar as well. I'm sure we'll touch on those as we discuss. What was that? Worry-free. Worry-free. With Corrales, this Gerardo Corrales, unbelievable. This was the horse that I brought up being out of Indy 500. That Bobby Barbera had trained, the Cairo Prince filly. And this horse went off at 8-1 and got up by a neck over the 5-2 favorite, Party Line. Nacho, Correas. Yeah, everybody chipping in. The whole, virtually everybody that came through on the week. All right, don't need to worry about what's in the rearview mirror so much. We'll start to look about what is coming up this weekend. Some races we might not get to, although with Marcus, I guess we could bring up the Panzeretta. Why not, right? The Panzeretta tomorrow is the stake at Fairgrounds. Got a nice 10-horse field. Over the Chris Block with the Loveberry. Your favorite. And let me see. What else might we not get to? I don't know if Scully or anybody looked at. I don't think anybody. Nobody brought up Tampa, did they? I don't think anybody mentioned Tampa. But you've got the start of the season, the start of the 3-year-old or 2-year-old to 3-year-old transition with the inaugural and the Sandpiper as well. So Sandpiper goes early, I think, on the card. Yeah, Sandpiper goes as the third, the inaugural as the ninth. That's Super Chow, with Delgado and Chantal over to ride. And the favorite in the inaugural. And in the Sandpiper, you're looking at Michael Yates with Dorth Vader, 8-5 favorite. And Michael Campbell's got Lady Radler. All right, so don't know if we'll come back to either of those. I told you about Laurel. We'll do that with Callie. And I guess the other stake we'll do with Shap, the inaugural, the holiday inaugural at Turfway. All right, 3:45, seventh race, 8-race card tomorrow, the first afternoon card of the winter season at Florence Yall. All right, the rest of it is Aqueduct and Del Mar. That's what we'll focus on. And with that in mind, and boy, I'm going to keep this right on the, keep this train on the track. Very frequently a challenge in these parts, especially after that opening. I looked at the clock and I said, oh my God, it's 8:59. Brad Free looked at the clock and is probably surprised that I'm calling him on time. Brad, good morning.
You know, miracles never cease. I was expecting, you know, you said 6:15. I thought, oh, maybe 6:20, 6:25. So congratulations. We're on time this morning. That's a good way to start the weekend.
Well, because you and Marty McGee, you always want to be in the first set.
Well, you know what? There's nothing better than mornings, especially when mornings at the racetrack. I'm not at the Santa Anita this morning, but dawn at any racetrack to me is as breathtaking and as fun and refreshing and as exciting as the afternoon competition. I mean, there's nothing I enjoy more than getting up early while it's still dark and going out and visiting with trainers and jockeys in the morning. So, yeah, I'd like to get up early. That also means we go to bed pretty early as well.
Well, that is true. And, you know, you bring up an interesting point, you know, going out to Santa Anita. And I am curious, this meet, how do you handle this, Brad? Do you just go down for certain weekends?
Yeah, that's exactly the way it works. There's only a handful of trainers that relocated to Del Mar for the fall meet. John Sheriff took everything down there, Phil D'Amato, and he took most of his runners down there as well. So it's no surprise that both those guys are having fantastic meets. But most trainers in Southern California remain up here in the Los Angeles area and ship down either on race day or the day before. So all the action, all the preparation is, or most of it anyway, is taking place at Santa Anita. And then if you want to cover the actual races, then you just drive down on Friday morning and spend the weekend at Del Mar. And this November fall meet has really become a huge hit in California. I know that everybody talks about summer at Del Mar. It's so much fun. And that's true. The vibe during the fall meet at Del Mar is so completely different, and it's relaxed and the weather is beautiful, and it's just a different feel during the fall meet at Del Mar than you get during summer. And I absolutely love this meet. It's been a great, replacement meet for when Hollywood Park closed in 2013. So it's a lot of fun. I know, the drive is a little, it can be a little rugged sometimes, trying to take the I-5 down from the LA area towards San Diego. But this Del Mar Fall Meet, the Autumn Turf Festival, has really been a great success in Southern California.
Well, and of course, for so long, a home game for Pridman. But you and Steve Anderson have got to, as I say to Mary Rampolini, got to have good tires.
You got to have good tires, and it helps to have a car that gets good gas mileage as well.
Let's start with the Derby, actually, because the Hollywood Derby, I opened the show by saying this is a race that undoubtedly a favorite of so many people over the years. And I think that first, if I'm not mistaken, that first running, maybe the first two, Brad, they took the Hollywood name off of it, but then put the name back on, and I'm glad of that. Like the Hollywood Gold Cup and the Hollywood Derby, there needs to be a way for Hollywood Park to live on in people's memories and hearts.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. They renamed a lot of these stakes races. The 2-year-old Philly Stake used to be called the Miesque. Now it's called the Jimmy Durante. The Generous Stakes for 2-year-old colts on grass was run at Hollywood Park. That's now called the Cecil B. DeMille. So, I mean, I like it when races are named after actual equine celebrities, be them either horses or people. It was unfortunate, in my opinion, and I sound like a curmudgeon, but I liked the old names of the Miesque and the Generous. And it's cool to have, Hollywood Park was a permanent part of the fabric of Southern California racing. And I'm glad that the Hollywood Gold Cup has been restored at Santa Anita. And then, of course, the Hollywood Derby this Saturday afternoon at Del Mar. It's a terrific race. I believe this race used to be run at a mile and a quarter of at Hollywood Park, if I'm not mistaken. It's now a mile and one-eighth, and really a deep competitive field in the final race on Saturday.
What's interesting about this group, And I suppose we can start with the favorite on John White, or not John White's line, but on the line. I'm just automatically inclined to say John's line. But here's Witt, and the question with Witt, I mean, if he runs his race, runs a mile and an eighth the way he's been running the mile, he's the horse to beat, and it feels, Brad, like he'll take some beating. But he, that's the question, the mile and the eighth.
That's the $400,000 question. His recent races are outstanding. Since he moved to grass, he's turned out to be a different horse. He looked like a potential star 2-year-old, and his career just kind of leveled off. He never really took that next step to, an improving 3-year-old. And it was after he got crushed 14 lengths by Jack Christopher and the Woody Stevens early this year that Fletcher, his trainer Todd Fletcher, kind of reevaluated things and said, what are we going to do here? He's by practical joke. He's not a turf sire. But on the bottom side, he's out of a Medaglia d'Oro mare. And so Fletcher worked him on grass one day at Saratoga. And he said it was my words, not his, like night and day. Witt turned the corner when he was put on grass. And you can see in his form, a good runner-up finish. In a Hall of Fame, a decisive win in a restricted stake. And last time out, I know he got beat as the favorite, but the horse who beat him, Balnikov, is a top-class turf miler, 3-year-old turf miler from California. And Witt did everything but win. He got worn down. He finished clear of third. The question on Saturday is, can he get a mile and one-eighth? And nobody really knows. Fletcher and his new Colts new jockey, Flavian Pratt are banking on the idea that Witt can switch off, he can relax, he can settle, and he can kick. And I think you're right. If he runs back to either of his last two starts at Keeneland and Saratoga, he will be very tough to beat. But Shug McGahee is coming in with a pretty good horse as well. Celestial City, his numbers on Thoroughgraph do not really compare to Witt. But here's what we know about Celestial City. One of the reasons why he got a relatively low number last time out in the Hill Prince, he got a 7 on Thoroughgraph compared to Witt, got a 4.5, lower being better on Thoroughgraph, is Celestial City got the all-time great trip, a rail trip last time out. He saved every inch of ground in the Hill Prince. But give him credit because he came home in 34 and change, and he drew away from the field. That was a big win by a colt who has improved since adding blinkers. So there's no doubt about Celestial City hitting the mile and 1/8. The question is he fast enough to beat Witt, who faces the distance question? And there is one crazy horse in this field, Steve, that I want to talk about, if you don't mind.
No, I know where you're headed. I know exactly where you're headed. And we had Mark Glatt the other day. He paid tribute to Jed Cohen, and Spycatcher's name came up. You got to be talking about the maiden.
No doubt about it. This, first of all, you look at the pace scenario of this race. It is murky, to say the least.
Yep.
There's really no confirmed true speed horse in this race. And Spycatcher is going to catch the exact same scenario in which he finished second in the Del Mar Derby in September at odds of 68-1. Yeah, he's a maiden, but he's kind of a maiden by accident. Glatt tried to enter him in a turf race early this summer. Glatt's liked this horse since before he started running, Spycatcher. He gave him a race in a sprint. He ran okay, finished fourth. He tried to enter him early at Del Mar in a maiden race, and he was excluded. But just by the luck of the draw, the race overfilled, they did not get in. So Glatt ran him in an allowance race the next day. He ran okay, fourth, beaten less than two lengths, came back in a maiden race, ran second, had some trouble, probably could have won. And so at that stage, he's 0 for 3, but the Del Mar Derby was always in his sights. And so Glatt said, you know what? Heck with it. We're going to give it a shot. And Spycatcher validated Glatt's opinion, and he finished second by a half length to arguably the top three-year-old grass horse in California, Slow Down Andy, one of the top three-year-olds anyway, and he ran well. So now what's the next objective for Spycatcher? Well, it has to be the Hollywood Derby. How do you get there? You either go in a maiden race, there was a maiden race 2 weeks ago that Glatt could have run in, or run in the stake race and give him 3 weeks between starts. So he ran him again in the stakes race. You look at this horse's past performances and you go, what kind of management is this? Glatt knows what he's doing. He is a very wise, cagey trainer. And his objective for the fall has been the Hollywood Derby. So they let it ride, third place finish, nothing more than a prep race for the Hollywood Derby. I don't know that a maiden has ever won this race, but Spycatcher, he's listed at 12-1, and I think that he's worth a gamble at the price because of the way this race is likely to unfold. Spycatcher will be on or near a relatively soft pace, and if he runs back to his Del Mar Derby runner-up finish, there's no reason to expect that Spycatcher won't be right in the hunt in deep stretch. So he's my third preference in the race, behind Celestial City and Witt, but Spycatcher at double-digit odds, I really think that he's a proper gamble this weekend in the Hollywood Derby.
I'm going to give you one other horse before we press into the rest of the card and look at the Matriarch on Sunday. And Ron Ellis with War at Sea, the Warfront colt for Double Down, $525,000 purchase, took a while to kind of find his sea legs. This is a horse that has won at a mile and an eighth. This is a horse with tactical speed and is really just a bad stumble out of the gate in the Del Mar Derby, perhaps, of being on a four-race win streak. I love the fact that Ron Ellis very quietly has rebuilt after a difficult fishtailing situation and has actually had a terrific year with just 41 starters. He's won 10 of 41. I think the world of Ron Ellis, and War at Sea 6-1, but I got a feeling he's going to tick upwards.
Yeah, he very well could. And he's the one horse that could, you know, potentially influence the pace scenario.
Yes.
The weird thing about War at Sea is this. He was supposed to run before the Del Mar Derby was his most recent start. He was expected to run early in the Del Mar summer meet, but something weird happened during a workout. He took a bad step somewhere, and so he did not get that prep race going into the Del Mar Derby. That was an excellent third place finish under the circumstances, making his first start since June. So now Ellis brings him back up home to Santa Anita, and he's expected to run in the Twilight Derby. He was scratched in the post parade. So I don't really know what issues War at Sea has been dealing with, but he's a horse that has missed a couple starts due to extenuating circumstances. And now he's coming into the Hollywood Derby, having not raced since early September. This is a very good Son of Warfront. I'm just not sure. And even Ellis after the Del Mar Derby said, had he had a prep race, maybe it would have been a different story, beaten only a length. Now he's coming into the Hollywood Derby under a similar scenario, expected to have run in the Twilight Derby in early October, scratched in the post parade, and now entered in the Hollywood Derby. So he's a good horse. I'm just not quite confident, and I could be wrong, that he is 100% fit for this mile and one-eighth race on Saturday.
We'll see what Toby Terrell's got to say in the Del Mar Clocker Report probably later this afternoon. It's a good group. Peter Miller's got Handy Dandy coming off the Let It Ride win. And in fact, we should mention Handy Dandy, 8-1, has never been out of the exacta at Del Mar on this course.
Yeah, he's a good horse, a good solid horse. The Let It Ride Stakes, in terms of its significance toward the Hollywood Derby, is minimal. The Let It Ride Stakes is a restricted stakes race. It's all generally an exciting race, and it was this year as well. And Handy Dandy got there by a nose over Script and Spycatcher. It has not really been a productive race moving forward toward the Hollywood Derby. And you go, well, didn't you just talk about the third place finisher from the Let It Ride, Spycatcher? Yes, that's true. But Spycatcher has already established himself via his runner-up finish in the Del Mar Derby as a top-class horse. I generally go against horses coming out of the Let It Ride Stakes, a restricted stakes that does not often attract a, you know, stellar field.
Should also, allude a little bit to Graham Motion, who has proven pretty adept at trying to poach these stakes at this time of year. And Graham sends both Script 8-1, picks up Umberto Rispoli, and he's also got Speaking Scout Juan Hernandez takes that call. It is the Hollywood Derby. It is a lot of fun and intriguing. And for Brad, Celestial City, Wit, and the Glatt Maiden Spycatcher, the Jimmy Durante. And the key question I've got, Brad, Nick Alexander, who is the savviest namer of horses when it comes to movie stars and sports celebrities and whatever. And I'm waiting for Nick, can't say no, Nick, to name a filly Mrs. Calabash just so he can win the Jimmy Durante.
I love it. Well, that could happen somewhere down the line. In the meantime, there is a cowbred in the Jimmy Durante this weekend. It's not bred by Nick Alexander, but Quickly Parkett is a cowbred in this race, and I guess she has a shot off that big win at Golden Gate Fields. This is the 1 mile grass race for two-year-old fillies, formerly referred to as the Miesque, and I like this race quite a bit because I like a horse to bet on, and I don't know if she's good enough. I don't know if any of these fillies are good enough. This is it's been a bizarre race over the years.
Yeah.
The last eight runnings since it turned in from the Miesque to the Jimmy Durante, eight runnings of this stake race at Del Mar, five of them were won by last out maiden winners. So it's a kind of a scramble of a race from a handicapping perspective. And there are five last out maiden winners in this year's field, including the morning line favorite Liguria, who is a full sister to multiple grade one winner Avenge, shipping in for trader Chad Brown. She's the 3-1 favorite on the morning line. But there's another filly in here that I like quite a bit. And she's actually making the third start of her U.S. campaign. Her name is The Best Is Yet to Be. She completely bombed in her U.S. debut in September. Trainer Phil D'Amato, in hindsight, said, "I ran her too quick off the plane." D'Amato likes to have them acclimate a little bit before he runs them. He ran The Best Is Yet to Be too quickly. She ran flat. 2 months later, on opening weekend of this meet, The Best Is Yet to Be responded from the short freshening and finished a terrific second in an allowance race. She ran her final quarter mile in 23.39, and she has improved since then, according to D'Amato. The Best Is Yet to Be will fire, and she needs to take another step forward, and I think she's going to do just that. She's already faster than Liguria on thoroughgraph numbers. The Best Is Yet to Be got a 14.25. Liguria got a 15.5. So if The Best Is Yet to Be does make that forward move, 5-1 is a generous price. I'm not saying that she has to win this race. All I'm saying is that she will fire. And if she does move forward, I think she's good enough to win. 5-1 is a good number. You look at the jockey situation. Flavian Pratt rode The Best Is Yet to Be twice. He jumps over to Liguria. Well, he committed to trainer Chad Brown before The Best Is Yet to Be was confirmed for this race. So that's maybe Pratt likes Liguria better anyway. I don't know that. But I'm not worried about the jockey situation because I think there's more to that move from one filly to another than you might expect. So I'll take Umberto Rispoli at 5-1 on The Best Is Yet to Be in the Jimmy Durante.
There's one horse I'll mention that is interesting for Brian Corner. Sell the Dream, 5-1 with Cedillo. And what's notable, first of all, gets Cedillo back, but more importantly, gets back on the grass. And I understand, here's another Calbred, and I understand, you know, taking the swings in those lucrative state bred races on the dirt earlier this summer and then a couple of weeks ago at Santa Anita. But this is a turf horse, and Sell the Dream feels tactical, just feels like this is a good spot for her.
It's the perfect spot for her. Her three starts on grass were all outstanding, a win and two runner-up finishes in stakes races. And you could make the case that she's the most qualified filly in this field. Runner-up in the grade three behind Comanche Country. Comanche Country would be even money against this group.
Yep.
And Sell the Dream finished second to her twice. So, I'm glad you mentioned her because I kind of overlooked her. She's my second preference. I respect her. Her numbers are good. She's back on her preferred surface. And she is a definite contender. I like her style because she can make her own trip. She can be forwardly placed. She does not have to have the lead. And she is rock solid in the Jimmy Durante. Sell the Dream is another Calbred, but Calbred by Munnings.
And finally, Ragtime Row is going to have to work out a trip from outside, but there's plenty of pace. And Kyle Fry aboard for Jeff Mullins. And, of course, obviously at some point there'll be these starts will be a little less emotional, but still in the wake of Jed Cohen's passing for Red Barons and Rancho Temescal. And Ragtime Rose, 12-1, actually, which feels like a decent exotic include. Those are the two key stakes. And actually, I'm just looking, Brad, you made The Best Is Yet to Be the best bet of the day for you.
I did because, I mean, most of the time, best bet of the day, it equates to most probable winner on the card. But I like this filly so much. I'm going to bet on her if I can get, 7-2, 4-1. And so why not? I mean, the only alternative was to go with the filly who's going to be the shortest price on the entire card, and that's Tecumseh Carolyn in race number 4. She's listed at 6-5. I think she's going to be about 2-5, and she should win. I try not to make odds on favorites. best bet of the day. Sometimes you kind of have to, but on Saturday, the best is yet to be at 5-1. Yeah, best bet on the card. Not a slam dunk, not a rock solid single, just a good gamble at a square price.
Well, the Stormy Liberal, the other stake on the card, 5-furlong turf stake that starts the late pick 5-9 race card tomorrow at Del Mar. And looking at the Stormy Liberal, do we like Phil D'Amato, or Phil D'Amato?
No kidding. I know. This isn't the inaugural running of the Stormy Liberal, and it's a great addition to the Autumn Stakes calendar because there has not been a turf sprint in Southern California since October 1st, and the next turf sprint stakes race is December 31st. So the Southern California stakes calendar needed this race of a turf sprint, and look what happened. It drew a very, very good field. The best horse in the race, I think, is Mark Glatt trained What Makes Sammy Run. But 5 furlongs is not his best trip. He's using this race as a segue toward the Joe Hernandez 6.5 down the hill on December 31st at Santa Anita. He'll be running late. He could win if everything breaks right. Richard Mandela has 2 in the race, including the Moneyline favorite, and I think the horse to beat, and that's number 2, Laneway. He's the son of Into Mischief, whose career just basically stalled until he was gelded in spring of 2021. And since he was gelded, he's turned into a racehorse. 2 wins, 3 seconds from 5 starts, a pair of runner-up finishes in graded stakes races. He has run well over the Del Mar turf course. He has defeated Cold Heart. He got beat by What Makes Sammy Run, but that was going 6.5 on the hill at Santa Anita. I think that this is the race that Laneway is supposed to, maybe supposed to win, is a little too bold. He can win. He certainly qualified. This is his best shot at defeating What Makes Sammy Run. 5 furlongs on turf. But D'Amato, I mentioned Cold Heart, who has already defeated Laneway in the past. He tailed off 2 subsequent starts, but he's been fresh in 2 months. He comes back on a course that he does like. D'Amato also starts Turn on the Jets, who is a pace-pressing N2X-eligible sprinter who's, I think he actually fits perfect in this spot. It's a wide-open race, I guess. And Laneway is definitely the one to beat. Cold Heart, second preference. And then What Makes Sammy Run will be rolling late. And you know, maybe he gets there, but What Makes Sammy Run's main target is December 31st at Santa Anita. A very interesting race, the Stormy Liberal, a good addition to the calendar. Now, if we can just add a filly mare dirt route and a dirt sprint, those are two missing ingredients to the Southern California stakes calendar, we'd be in good shape. But the Stormy Liberal, I'm glad that Del Mar has added this to the Autumn Turf Festival. A good race and a good solid 10-horse field.
I think I'm interested. I think I'm interested in Turn on the Jets for D'Amato. Got to look at this harder. The Sunday card. Quick glance ahead. Last weekend when I talked to you about Sunday, you said the picks were in. Well, what are you doing Sunday in the Matriarch?
Well, I mean, you have to recognize who the class of the field is.
Sure.
She's the defending winner, and she's going to try to end an outstanding career with another Grade 1 victory. And I'm referring to number 6, Regal Glory, whose 10th place finish in the Breeders' Cup Mile last time out. It was a lot better than a typical 10th place finish. She was wide throughout. She didn't get her trip. She actually still earned a number that's probably fast enough to win this race. She got a 2.75 on Thoroughgraph. Regal Glory is making the final start of a career that has already, she's won 12 of 22, made $2.3 million, and she will be bred next spring. So they're going to try to send her out in a blaze of Regal Glory, and I think she's the horse to beat. Bill Mott sends in Wakanaka, who's a very good filly. Mm. He's finished behind Regal Glory a couple times already. And then there's a horse that's not good enough on class, but you know where she's going to be. And number 5, Hamwood Flyer, is going to try to steal this race. I doubt she'll be able to do it, but boy, she goes 45 and change. She could open up. Maybe she gets brave and maybe she steals it. I know that she is training absolutely lights out right now. Hamwood Flyer is the pace of the race, but when all is said and done, Regal Glory is really supposed to win the Grade One Matriarch. She's the best in the field, the class of the field, and I think that she'll be a single on a lot of tickets. Sunday is closing day, mandatory payout day in the Pick Six, the only day on which to play, and Regal Glory, probably a key horse for many bettors.
Well, we've talked many, many times over the years about Regal Glory and our friend, our late friend, Paul Pompa. It'd be a wonderful way to end her career. And just, you know, have been a big fan from word go. The Cecil B. DeMille, the other stake as well, the one-mile, two-year-old event, the counterpart to the Durante, and a rare opportunity for Joe Harper to step out of the shadows.
Yeah, no kidding. This race that used to be called the Generous Stakes. Two-year-old open to either gender, of course. These are colts and geldings in this field. I was surprised when the nominations came out that trainer Bob Baffert nominated Speedboat Beach, who it seems like just a pure sprinter, and I was even more surprised when he went ahead and entered this horse in the race. Speedboat Beach is the best horse in the race. He's the fastest horse in the race. I have no idea what's going to happen the final quarter mile, but I know where he's going to be turning for home. Speedboat Beach is fast. He's a stakes-winning sprinter. He's never gone two turns. He got run into the ground in the Breeders' Cup turf sprint. Even his turf sprint stakes win two starts back was not as impressive as his debut on dirt. I gotta lean toward Baffert. I gotta trust that Baffert knows what he's doing. He's kind of proven that to be the case over the years. And Speedboat Beach, if he runs his race, if he can carry his speed a mile, he's going to be long gone. If not, then Ah Geez, who faces really the similar challenge, and that's to stretch his speed. He's not a front runner, Ah Geez. He's more tactical, but he's unproven around two turns, and we don't know if he can do it. But the way that he won a turf allowance sprint on opening weekend of the meet suggests to me, and also to the jockey who rode him that day, John Velasquez, told Doug O'Neill after the race, this horse will have no problem going a mile. Ah Geez is sharp. He's in better form now than he was when he tried a mile his last couple starts. So if Speedboat Beach does not stay the trip, I think that Ah Geez could be in the right spot, and then they'll have to hold off the closing rally of Ransomware.
Yep.
First Piece actually also has a chance. He won't get the same easy lead he got last time, but he ran well, and he's an improving colt. So it's kind of a weird race because I think that the two horses that I picked 1-2, neither one of them are guaranteed to stay a mile, Speedboat Beach and Ah Geez. So a very curious race five on Sunday.
I'm glad you mentioned Ransomware because it feels like Ramon Vasquez, who's gotten off, you know, very nicely on the West Coast, and feels like Vasquez can basically set up shop behind the speed. He broke his maiden stretching out after a very good try out of a hot race, in fact, that maiden race, the October 21st race at Santa Anita. Brad, always fabulous. Looking forward to getting out there. I'll be out for the Starlet, which usually is the a Steve Anderson production.
Yeah, we're going to see if Faiza is as good as her career debut made it look. She's going to run. Baffert's going to stretch her out off that 109-1 smashing win in her career debut. So she's the early favorite for the Starlet. So I look forward to visiting with you down the road, Steve.
Absolutely. Brad Free, everybody. Brad Free 1 on your Twitter, and just the greatest. Let's stay right here. We've got to get a couple of spots in. We got Scott Shapiro, who's going to join us next. We'll get some Turfway in, and then Callie Francois will get the two Maryland juveniles. Then we'll start hour two with Marcus Hirsch, Dave Grenig, and Scully. All right, there's your first 2 hours, and Brad is just unbelievable. He's so good. Just love having him on. We need a Pick Six carryover. Those were those great visits with Brad that when we would do pick six carryovers, like Hollywood, the big Hollywood. It seems like Hollywood, not that Santa Anita didn't have great carryovers. Here's somebody that played his share of California carryovers in the golden age of pick six carryovers. Shap, good morning.
Good morning. I miss those days. That was tough to figure out a way to, with my budget, to play those big $2 payouts. But I hit one or two in my time.
There you go. Exactly. Happy to have you tracking Turfway, which I think it's interesting. We've got two cards in the books, and we'll see what happens tonight. But so far, Scott, it feels like there's some normalcy. There's some, there hasn't been the wild hijinks that we sometimes get out of Turfway Park.
Yeah, I think the narrative, and I've been guilty of it over the years, is it's a dartboard out there at Turfway. You know, anything goes, chaotic results. And there have been a lot of favorites over the years, but I think it's been tough to kind of piece together pick fours and pick fives. But not so far. I mean, there's been a lot of formful results, not a lot of chaos at all. Gerardo Corrales, I'm six wins in the first 2 days. I expect, I don't think he can continue at that rate, but he is a very, very good rider, Steve, that really thrives up at Turfway, gets a lot of the top mounts there and takes advantage. But he's a guy to follow, you know, even at Churchill and Keeneland and whatnot. But Chris Landeros, I believe, has three wins, and the bigger Barnes, Mike Maker, off to a good start. It's been a lot more formful than I would have even thought at this point.
Before we dive into any analysis, and certainly that's a nice field tomorrow for the holiday inaugural, let's first talk about this daily opportunity you've got at Turfway through Twin Spires. And I got a beautiful new graphic, the daily double down. give everybody the opt-in details.
Yeah, this is a really cool promotion. We've run it a couple times before, but at Turfway, it's you get up to 50, again, not up to, I'm sorry, let me get that right. You get a 50% bonus on all winning Turfway Park daily double wagers on Fridays and Saturdays in the month of December, excluding Christmas Eve, December 24th. As always, you got to remember to go to the offers page either on the app or on twinspires.com and opt in first before doing so. But the whole key is to hit more than one daily double on the card. If you hit two, three, four, you get that 50% bonus. So if you hit just one, you'll get the normal pay. And Steve, we've talked about this before, more so with pick threes, I think. But in this day and age, and I'm guilty of it as much as anybody, you know, you always think of pick fours, pick fives, you know, the pick six carryovers when they occur. And, you know, doubles and pick threes can go forgotten a little bit. And they can pay well, particularly if you're against favorites in two legs. And this is a great opportunity not only to kind of get back in that mode of playing daily doubles, but also get a huge bonus when you're doing so. So I think it's certainly worth looking at it, and it kind of helps you maybe leverage some of the stronger opinions on the card. Maybe you're not as comfortable in a couple of the races in certain sequences, but you can piece together two races and have strong opinions, whether that means you're playing just an old school 1x1 double or perhaps, you know, 3x1 or 2x2 against favorites, but a very worthwhile promotion for the month of December.
Very nice. And in addition, you should always check out all of the, all of the offers. And in fact, there's a late pick five, hit it and split it for $1,000 at Fairgrounds as well to opt into. So, your favorite,
exactly.
Your favorite tracks, and it's free money if you hit. In some cases, it's free. In some cases, promotions that is free money when you don't hit. So make sure you check.
Trying to get more and more promotions where you're rewarded for hitting and not just where you're, finishing second or third, which those money backs and whatnot are great as well. But yeah, I see the exact insurance offer is today at Del Mar, races 6, 8, and 9 for those playing out there. It'll be on at Aqueduct on Saturday. So should be a lot of fun, but I'll definitely be jumping in on this double down promotion without question.
Let's take a look at tomorrow and start with the holiday inaugural. Here's a 12-horse field. I mean, almost, I won't say every race is a 12-horse field, but for the most part, we looked at the first four cards with Tyler Picklesheimer the other day, and, 10 by 12 by 9 by 12 by 12. I mean, it's you better eat your Wheaties.
Yeah, exactly. And that's even more of a reason to think doubles, maybe more than, you know, depending on your budget. You know, obviously it's nice to hit big pick fours and fives with full fields, but if you're a little bit more limited on budget size, you know, that double could be even a better decision. But yeah, this is a fun race, the Hollywood inaugural. It's the first stakes race of the meet. $125,000 on the line, Phillies and mares. And I like number four, Thundering Creed, in here. I think she's a very cool daughter of Jimmy Creed from Michael Tomlinson. Has already shown an affinity for this course last year, rattling off two wins and then finishing third in the Queen Bee, the $100,000 stakes event later on in the meet. And when we saw her last, it was a pretty good effort in the Grade 3 Franklin from well off the pace, finishing second at nearly 20-1 to eventual Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint long shot winner Caravelle. And the third place finisher in that race, Star Divine, came back to win. I think there's enough pace to set up her late kick here, and 4-1 on the line seems pretty fair. Pretty tough read on the favorite in here, Steve. Number 9, Ready to Venture, the 3-1 favorite for Michael Stidham, who won a race on last night's card. You know, she comes in off of a win going two turns at Presque Isle in a $100,000 stakes event, and clearly, you know, likes it on the all-weather surface. She's 2-for-2. But I have seen the Turfway Park synthetic, you know, and I don't have the reason for it, but horses coming in from Presque Isle, the surface must either be different or the class levels, because they haven't run as well as you would think. That being said, she does have a big effort over the Woodbine all-weather surface as well, so she merits major respect. And then there's Fire on Time, a horse that just keeps winning races despite voided claims and getting disrespected after those voided claims. She's won 3 in a row, 4 of 5. She was actually the horse that closed out my big Derby City 6 back in November of last year. So that was a fun memory. But she's beaten me a couple times since. She hasn't been on anything other than dirt, but she's got good tactical speed and she keeps winning races. So tough to outright omit her.
There's a horse that I've got a little bit of an interest in, and I just wanted to see what, not at 7-2, I don't. All right. Well, so much for that. Dale's got, the Not This Time, and they're okay. They're okay on synthetic. But that number doesn't, that number does nothing for me. Well,
Last Leaf was another one maybe you could look at. That's another Not This Time. I don't know what happened to her in the last couple. She's, tougher competition, but she kind of was just out running those stakes races here in Kentucky.
How about Ray Hernandez with that Miner's Queen? What are we getting on Miner's Queen? 15-1.
15-1, yeah.
There's a horse that basically is coming off a career best last time at Keeneland, and Bernardini, I don't know, could translate to the synthetic. I certainly will be somewhat forwardly placed. I have Miner's Queen at that price, because I just don't see where there's anybody in here that is so, so special that I've got to be fearful. I certainly have no argument against Thundering Creed. Of course, Trombetta's got Mrs. Weber's Sweet Super Sweet coming in here off of, the series of the press performances, and is going to have to go from the rail. First call for Shemino by Mike. It's the first time he's using him. So I don't know. It's a good race. Feels like a spot where, you shouldn't be shy about reaching for a horse if you like something.
Yeah, Miner's Queen has been down on the inside, either the one hole or the two hole in 5 straight. And she's kind of like a tactical speed type horse, not a go to the lead type. So I always prefer those middle post or maybe outside draws of these one turn races with horses like that. That just allows the jock more options and they can relax a little bit more. She should get a good trip at a pretty good price.
All right. Who else you like on the big Saturday card?
I guess my other two main plays are in the 5th and the 6th, which are both maiden events. The 5th is a 2-year-old maiden event, and I'm going to trust number 2, Melania, another Michael Tomlinson runner here. to take a step forward or maybe three on the surface switch. This is a horse that I thought ran really well on debut back on July 1st towards the tail end of the spring meet. 28-1 that day, broke from the rail, didn't really show a lot of speed, chased the wire-to-wire winner and half decision for Tom Amos. But she finished well and galloped out very big. Now, since then, two underwhelming efforts, to say the least, over the Churchill Downs main track, sprinting. But those were against good groups and just, you know, both sides of this pedigree suggest turf slash all weather. They spent $300,000. You don't see that many Michael Tomlinson runners for $300,000. And I just think she's, you know, been freshened up. It looks like Tomlinson decided to point for this spot or point for the all weather surface in some capacity. And the two turns shouldn't be an issue. So at 8-1, I'm going to take a little bit of a leap of faith that Melania can get back to what I thought she was going to be after that debut effort.
All right.
And then in the sixth, I think number six, More Than Work, is a deserving 5-2 favorite, but this horse has had his chances for Brad Cox. Now, Brad's freshened him up, and instead of taking him down to New Orleans, he has opted to ship up to Turfway, and he adds the blinkers here. He can win, but I think he'll get a little bit over bet. There's two horses I have interest in. The bigger price one is number five, and Neshoba's Joy. You know, you remembered Neshoba's Gold, the dam who won three of her first four starts for Williamson and Racing, same owner and breeder, and Carla Gaines. And this horse is another that ran really well on debut at Kentucky Downs for Billy Morey, almost getting the money from well off the pace. And then two underwhelming efforts over the main track at Churchill. But again, another horse that's bred to prefer the turf or an all-weather surface. And we actually got proof of that in the Kentucky Downs race. So at 10-1, I'm going to make Neshoba's Joy my top pick. And then Cherie's horse, number eight, York Tavern. It's a horse that's only sprinted on the main track thus far in four tries. And it's been somewhat underwhelming. But another one that I think will take a step forward here, moving to the all-weather, half the Malibu Bonnie, who won three races in her career, two on the turf, one on the all-weather. Cherie adds the blinkers. I think this one will probably show a little more speed. So I'm going to use Neshoba's Joy in York Tavern against the favorite, More Than Work.
Very good. 5-8 in the sixth.
I apologize. Push Button, the 2-1 favorite, and
yeah,
another horse that I'm willing to kind of let beat me. I mean, this horse, That November 11th wash-off race, it was not one of the better maiden special weight events. Churchill was the finale that day. It was the only turf race slated on the card. 10 gauge did all he could as a 3-5 favorite to try to lose, but nobody wanted to take it. So tough to play against Maker and Corrales and then Cox, but I think both of these horses are a little bit vulnerable.
1 mile, the sixth race, afternoon card at Turfway, first of the Saturday slate. That's it?
Yeah, that's it on Saturday. I got a couple things I thought tonight as well, which is the classic evening card. For those that are keeping track at home, the Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday cards will be at night, and then the Saturday card will be in the afternoon with a 12:45 Eastern first post. And a little more formful in these couple of plays I've got. In race five, I think number 11, Miranda Rice, looks like a single in whatever late horizontal you want to play. This is a son of Constitution that'll need to avoid a wide voyage into that first turn, which is kind of tactical speed. But he just comes out of better races and facing better horses than he meets here. And I thought he ran a winning race on October 15th at Keeneland when we saw him last. He didn't get the same perfect trip that the winner Worthington got that day and still missed by just half a length. And then Worthington came back last week as part of that Luis Saez win brigade. I believe it was on Saturday on the Stars of Tomorrow card and won right back. And Gaslight Dancer, the one that beat this horse at Kentucky Downs, pretty nice maker runner. So I think Miranda Wright is a standout here. If we can get 2-1 in this field, I think that, you know, I'm not always a big fan of betting 2-1s to win, but in this case, I think might be a worthwhile play. And it also kicks off the late pick four there. And in the sixth, I like the 3-1 second choice, number 5, Raise Kane. This horse was really good on October 9th at Keeneland in his second start. Had to deal with a potential DQ, but he was much the best that day, and they ended up keeping him up, winning by over 5 lengths. And then Ben Colebrook brought him back in just 20 days off that big win in the Bowman's Mill. And that race was dominated by Super Chow on the front end. And this horse was down on the inside on a day where I thought the outside was where you wanted to be. Once he kind of got off the rail, he finished pretty well that day. And I think he's going to sit a really good stalking trip here off of the likely favorite, Fantastic Again, who, you know, gets some significant class relief out of the Breeders' Futurity. But he didn't do any running that day. And his one win came in a suspect spot, I thought, in a wash-off race at Saratoga on August 27th, where the runners that finished behind him have not come back to be that impressive thus far.
All right. First weekend of the season at Turfway, and it's going to be fun. Just big, full fields. Boy, today, unbelievable. Looking at this late action, 12 by 8 by 12 by 12. Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the early pick 5. 11 by 11 by 8 by 12 by 12. I did see, who was it last night? I know he put a big ticket in, put a very big ticket in, but he hit for 20-something thousand, and I meant to go back to it this morning.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, to congratulate. Oh, my gosh, I'm going to forget who it was. But
excellent.
You got to, I think you got to be well-funded to go after these. We'll follow your lead, Scott Shapiro, and maybe we'll even check in with some midweek ideas as the season progresses.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it. You know, I think people should definitely not be fearful of playing it. I think it starts at a really good time, and then, you know, at night on the Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And like you said, the full fields are great, and you know, you got to find spots to maybe be confident in, and then get some coverage. Speaking to your point, that definitely takes a decent bankroll to take a shot at some of the bigger horizontals.
Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Schaap, 34. Scott, good luck this weekend. Talk to you next week. I'll be coming to you from Los Al.
Sounds good, Steve. Have a good weekend yourself, my friend.
Scott Shapiro, folks. We're going to stay right here. We'll only take one break. There's too much going on. Going to go to Marcus Hirsch, then to Callie, because Marcus has got he's got something at the bottom of the hour that is a commitment. So I don't want to stack him up and get too far behind. Callie's got a little bit of leeway because the broadcast day doesn't start until later at Laurel Park. Right now, we say good morning to Marcus Hirsch of the Daily Racing Form.
Oh, hey, how's it going, Steve?
I'm good. I'm good. Do we have, Marcus, any you're following, and you and I actually went back and forth a little bit about the EHV1 news. Anything overnight? I had Gary Palmisano on yesterday. It seemed like yesterday was a decent day. No new problems.
I am not tracking the Kentucky stuff. Just Fairgrounds, and I don't know of nothing from there other than, you know, there were some horses that were at Churchill, like getting ready to go to Fairgrounds, and they actually had to turn around, like Obesos,
right,
for the Cigar Mile. And one thing that Fairgrounds can't really afford to lose any horses right now. With no turf, they got short fields. Dirt for the most part, so that's just another challenge for the racing office down there.
Yeah, exactly. Although, I was looking at the Panzeretta, which, and then of course, you know, when you look at one race, you see everything else, and not a bad Saturday card.
Saturday. Well, the Panzeretta, you can see, and that's supposed to be on turf.
Right.
And there are some turf horses in there. And Minute Waltz got stuck at Churchill, so she's not running.
All right. Take
so field of 9 at most.
All right.
It's okay. Yeah, I guess the card wasn't too bad. I mean, they're leaning heavily on Louisiana Brits, but
yeah.
Fortunately, there are a lot of them.
Did you, I did not look at the selection grid. Over seemed like the likeliest type on the front end.
Not sold.
Not sold.
She's a better turf horse. I think she's pretty good on turf. And the dirt horses she's been beating she's been doing it well enough, but, this is not a great field, but they're better horses than she's been beating. Let me put it that way.
I gotcha.
And she's done. I mean, if you look, she's already run 7 times this year. She's had a very busy schedule since September. She has nowhere to go. No improvement, I don't believe, on dirt right now. On turf, I would say she does. So I wasn't sold on her at all. Although I do like the horse, and I'm looking forward to seeing her back on grass. But then, you know, it's hard to have a strong opinion on anybody else in the race for me. It's wide open.
The taking Minute Waltz out of this, I got to say, there was every likelihood that Minute Waltz would be potentially. I'm just looking back.
I liked her. That was my pick.
Yeah, exactly.
She got kind of bogged down. So anyway, there's no point in belaboring that since she's not even running.
All right, good point. All right.
But the horse that beat her, Perfect Happiness, I'm not sold on her. That was that was a high water mark for that horse. She could get a decent pace. I mean, she's 8-1 on the line. I don't know that happening. Anyway, I've got to sum it up. No strong opinion in that race whatsoever.
Well, then let's turn our attention instead to the game plan and your three prime plays for the day.
The game plan has been rolling. I'm due for a bad weekend.
Don't say that. That's we don't need a qualifier. Your performance record speaks for itself.
Been rolling. I'd like the Hollywood Derby was I had spent a long time on that race, probably for no good reason because it's really, really difficult. But to me, I wanted to make sure that I turned as many stones over as I could and came up with something because I don't think that either of the two likely favorites, Wit or Celestial City, has to win. Wit, the horse that beat him last time, is pretty nice, Belnikov. I thought that he was 2-1 in the Bryan Station. I guess I can see why I didn't think that he beat much at the Better Talk in the Better Talk now at all. I thought the number really overrated his performance there. He's got 390 plus buyers, which makes him on the buyers clearly the favorite here. I don't like him in a mile and an eighth. And I think that his quality is not, to me, fully represented by. Or it's overrepresented by the figures. And then Celestial City, you run in New York, you get an extra 5 points on the buyers. Everyone knows that. So I thought his 89 is no better than all the horses that have been racing in California. Plus, he's got a ship. I'm being mostly tongue-in-cheek about those numbers.
Yes.
I just think, he's got 88, 87, 89, some blinkers. Okay, he got drilled by Annapolis, and then he barely beat a modest field, I thought, of one other than. And he, even though he won nicely, I mean, McKinnon and Grand Sonata, the two horses behind him in the Hill Prince, they'd be 15-1 shots in here to me. And he got a perfect trip. Shug has not run, he's run one horse the last 5 years in California, Southern California. Just doesn't make the ship a lot. Maybe that's meaningless, but I'm against both of those. East Coast trainer based favorites, and then got a whole mishmash of California horses. Graham Motion somehow has 3 horses in this race. The one I like best is Script, who's 8-1 on the line. That would be a very fair price. This horse does do something for me. He just got rolling too late last time because he's a weird horse. He has a good finish, but it takes him a long time to get to it. And in both of his turf races, he really had to be ridden along. And there's a jockey change. Those things concerned me enough that I dug even a little bit deeper and I'm going to try to get clutch hitter home at a big price. And a big part of that is there's just really very little speed in this race outside of one of the motions, Evan Harlan, who I expect to go to the front. Maybe not. He's not like a super fast horse. But clutch hitter just broke badly last time. He has a lot more speed than he showed in that race. And I think he's got enough pace to get over from the outside draw. I don't know what happened in his one other than at Del Mar. That was a step back after a very, very nice maiden win where he was right off the pace. And then in the Let It Ride, he had zero chance. He was, after getting off slowly, he got stuck in behind for the first time. The rider was uncomfortable. The horse was uncomfortable, totally out of rhythm. And then he was blocked literally the entire stretch run. Still was beaten just a length and a quarter off in a very encouraging effort, I thought. I think the horse has got a lot of talent. I think he'll stay. Obviously, you don't know if he's good enough, but the price is right for me to find out.
Nice. Brad was on with us in the first hour, and there's cases that can be made in a lot of directions, so I don't blame you at all.
Well, thank you. I would hate to be blamed.
Well, and you know, one little nuance that actually Brad in passing had mentioned, because it's not like the summer meet, not all the horsemen bring their strings down. Sheriff's does. And there's something to be said.
Unfortunately, XPTV did not bring their string down, because I would have loved to have seen those last two works. Because the works I watched earlier, his work on November 5th he looked a lot more powerful than in earlier works that were available on video. That 59-1, I did look at the work tab that day. The track, for whatever, wasn't that fast for half miles, but there were a bunch of 59 halves. The raw time itself does not mean a lot to me. But, I just would have liked to have seen him, because he was a progressive sort. And with those kinds of horses, I love to see how they're working.
Well, Toby Terrell will have notes in the DRF Clocker report.
There you go.
All
thank
right.
you for thank you for plugging my company's product for me.
Well, it's the best with Toby and with when we come to the east half of the country with Mike Welch and the rest of the team. Grenig, who pitches in now, and there's it's a cast of thousands that trying to put the information in everybody's hands. All right, let's take a look in New York at the Gopher Juan. The first mention, Dave Grenig will join us in a little bit. But the Gopher Juan drew a nice bulky field, and there's some interesting things happening in there.
Agree. What about the Star Mile, though? I'm surprised it's this soft, really.
It certainly would look better with Baby Yoda and with Obesos. I mean, if you'd had the original eight, but you know. But,
sure, a little better.
A little
but
better.
I just think that we've lost a lot of talent off that division. I'm afraid that this is going to be a harbinger of things to come over the wind. We shall see. But I just thought the two favorites looked too formidable to me in there, and I didn't love either one of them. And the two-year-old races, I mean, the John Service horse, Tuskegee Airman, he's fine, but I'm taking 8-5 on that horse. It's a no thank you, and I really wanted to beat Julia Shining, the Demoiselle. She got a 71 buyer. I don't know. I don't know what to make of her. When she leveled out, she was fine. She gave the kickback. We'll see what happens. I couldn't find anyone to beat her. But I did like I do like this horse Bangsting in the Gopher Wad. The problem being, David Aragona makes the best line in the country for my money. But I'm worried that he's got this one a little wrong. Just in the sense that I think Bangsting could be shorter. She may be too logical. Maybe not. But she's a really nice mare who I'm sure benefited from her comeback race on October 30th at a distance shorter than her best. She's has a strong affinity for Aqueduct and a one-turn mile. She handles a wet track if the rain does indeed come. She's extremely well drawn on the outside to get a perfect pressing or stalking trip or even lead if none of the other speed shows, although I think it will. And she beat the morning line favorite, Battle Bling, in the Heavenly Prize in March when she took the worst of things and Battle Bling got a perfect trip. Battle Bling has gotten soft leads in her last two races and is, if anything, due to regress with a much more complicated trip, I think, in front of her in the Gopher Wand. I was happy to take her on, and I thought Bankston was definitely the right one for me in this spot.
I don't disagree at all. 6-for-8 at Aqueduct and 3-for-5 going a mile, and second off the layoff. There's lots to like about the McMahon homebred, Hidden Brook involved as well. That's the Gopher Wand, which goes as the 8th, starting the late pick 3 at Aqueduct. We'll talk to Dave Grenning in a little bit. And then we're going to talk to Callie Francois next at Laurel about these two Maryland Juvenile Championship stakes. And I tell you, the stakes cards at Laurel this fall, today's the first day of winter, they've been really fun and really good.
Agree. I totally agree. I've noticed the same thing. I actually struggled to come up with a third play on Saturday, even though there were quite a number of races. I perused everything and didn't see much, but this horse Malibu Moonshine in the Maryland Juvenile Filly really caught my eye, especially because this horse Chickiness might be favored. I think, you know, she's 6 times started, totally exposed. I didn't see it. Anything to really fear in this race. And this horse, Malibu Moonshine, the issue with her is you can see her work pattern is less than ideal. And I didn't know till I read GRF's Dan Illman's race preview, where he talked to the trainer, Charlie Baker, and the filly had gotten sick at some point. However, she did get in 3 works in November, including 2 within 5 days of one another. And again, there's no video, so I didn't see these works, but she did work pretty fast, 5-8 over the training track at Belmont. And while she only got a 57 buyer in her debut, it was visually quite impressive. And after she belatedly changed leads at about the 8th pole, she really took off again. She had trouble at the start. It's a horse who may have a little more pace than she showed first time out. She had no problem with a sloppy track at Pimlico. It is supposed to rain at Laurel. That gives you a little bit of confidence that she'd be able to handle it off going. And as like the possible second choice, I thought she could offer just a hint of value.
Nice. There it is. DRF game plan.
Yeah. Simple.
Yeah.
Hours and hours of work, minutes of exposition.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody. And you're going to do some, you and Anderson going to do a little bit of HKIR lead up for next week?
I'll have to talk to Steve. I know I am.
Good.
I passed on the trip this year. I just had some concerns about circumstances. But the races should be fabulous. I mean, Golden 60 was awesome last time. There were really good horses coming from Japan, a pretty big European contingent. I do urge anyone who pays even a little bit of attention to Hong Kong to be prepared for a late night on Saturday night, because it should be fun.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody. DRF Hirsch. Marcus, thank you. We'll catch up soon.
Great to talk to you, Steve. Have a good one.
Marcus Hirsch, folks. We'll stay here. We got at least one more visit. We'll get Callie Francois in, and we'll pick up and run with the two Maryland Juvenile Championship races. Be interesting to see what Callie has got to say, because, you know, she's right there. She's got her finger on the pulse. And you know, up until the weather turned cold, she actually had her hands on the reins of a lot of these horses, but not anymore. It's got a little too precious for you out there, princess.
Fine. You know what? Fine. You want to label me that? That's just fine with me. I'm warm. Although I was out there Thursday. I was out there Thursday morning just to get some interviews in. So you can check that out on the Maryland YouTube page and just go under the videos and the latest interviews that should be up there. And let's get right into it, Steve. I talked with Eric Camacho. That's one of the interviews that we have. And Eric Camacho rides post time for Brittany Russell, who's your even money favorite in the Maryland Juvenile. And this horse is an absolute jughead. So saying that, he's very green. He likes to play around. He's kind of just this big kid playing around and making a fuss of everything. So Eric gets on this horse every day. I don't know if it should be said, but he actually trains sometimes he trains twice a day because he just likes to misbehave so much. But it takes nothing out of him. It takes absolutely nothing out of him. So really, and the biggest thing I want to talk about and highlight about Post Time is that he has this reputation of being very green. If you watch both of his races, you can see it. Because everything is a game to this boy right now. But Eric did say that in the past 2 weeks, he really has matured a bit mentally. He goes out there and he understands, he's starting to understand that it's, you know, there's a job to do and he's happy to do it. So, and to stay on task a bit. So we're going to, if you think that you like what you saw at Post Time last time out, I think there's more yet to come. The inside post does not worry Eric at all because he's just going to be sitting behind everybody anyway.
Interesting. This is a Bowman bred, Dr. Bowman and family with Brooke and company, and a $85,000 purchase by Mrs. Charles Hillwood. And interesting. Those two performances, they I don't want to say they lay over this field, because Johnny Z from Albany for Dale Capuano, it's going to a barn you know well. What you know, this seems like the prime, you know, first of all, it feels like the horse to catch, and that feels like the matchup, Johnny Z and Post Time.
Well, it's so funny because we just talked about Post Time being the absolute class clown, and then Johnny Z from Albany is such a class individual. For this two-year-old gelding, for Dale, he got the same type of trip essentially that he did in his first time out when you're comparing the Maryland Millie Nursery and Maiden Special Weight. This horse is very, very quick out of the gates, and Rui's back on. I assume that they're just going to be to go ahead and taking that same approach with him. He's just, in the past, in Pimlico, in his Pimlico start, in his early October start, he had a little bit of excuses. That Pimlico, he was against Heldish. He tried to chase a horse that came in from New York that was essentially a three horse race, and the horse that was supposed to win should have won. But now we're back with Maryland horses, and that last time out, it was on the slop. It still wasn't quite his trip. So he gets the four post. Rui knows exactly what to do with this guy. This guy is in great form. So it's going to be a game of catch me if you can. And so this is going to be it's going to be a really good barometer to see how Post Time is going to go. But it's hard to deny Post Time.
All right. Post Time seems to have a little bit of an edge, but I haven't even looked at the, let me look at the odds, because I printed these PPs when they came out, so we're looking.
Post Time is even money favorite, and Johnny Z from Albany is 8-5.
Interesting. I guess the other considerations are on the outside, feeling woozy for Amy, and Coffee with Chris for John Saltzman. All right, let's take a look at the Phillies then and see if this is a little bit more competitive. And Marcus.
Oh, yes. Right? Quite a different story. It's more of a wide open affair than what it looks to be. I actually go with Malibu. I go with the Charlie Baker horse on the inside.
So
I was
did Marcus.
Just so. Yeah, I was Charles and Barker. I was Malibu Moonshine on the inside. She's 7-2. I was just so wildly impressed with that effort back at Pimlico on the slop. Just very professional. She didn't get the type of start that she needed to. So obviously Dylan Davis rode her to well in hand, just kept her confident. And I'm really excited to see what that filly's going to be producing in this second time start, because she was considered for the Maryland Million Lassie, but Charles and Baker was a trainer scratch that day.
What looking here to see, Brittany Russell didn't name a rider for Bosserati. This is the Joel Politi filly that we were looking forward to coming out of the
Lassie. Yeah, still no update on that yet.
I can check with Joel. Let's see if she's running.
That's it. If there's no jock, there's also a decent chance that she's just going to go ahead and scratch that filly, because I don't have an answer for what happened last time out. She's bad. I mean, she's here at Laurel. I haven't seen her work, you know, since in the Maryland Million Lassie. I just haven't seen any works with this filly at all as well. So I won't be surprised if Brittany ends up scratching this horse.
All right. I just reached out to Dr. Politi and see if he's not in surgery, we might get an answer. All right.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Very good.
One of our favorite trainers, Linda Albert, Liquidator.
Yes. I was talking to Linda yesterday, and you know, the light bulbs, when you drop them down, they get confident. And she was at that last time effort out against, against? Coal Mine Angel of Canterbury. Okay, so some okay horses. That was a Brittany Russell horse that she beat last time out. But Gutsy Go, she's the type where she's just going to be, she's another one that's going to be taking, I was talking to Tyus Lyapusina, and she is going to be taking the back seat. She kind of needs to run the show herself. So as long as she just gets a clean trip, she's going to be showing up. She's definitely good for underneath. This is a step up for this filly. So it's going to be nice. It's going to be nice to see what she produces, but she's an interesting one at 10-1. Absolutely.
I don't know. After that,
Fast Tracked. I do like the Delacour horse.
All right. Yep. Fast Tracked.
Delacour's been 8 for 29 lately with the second time start. So why not jump on that cross traffic train? Rosie Express, 15-1.
Uh-huh.
I stopped by Hugh McMahon's barn. I just missed him, but talking to his assistant, Alex Horn, horse is in very, very good form. Now, Hugh is not doing great. First after the claim, 1 for 23, 3 seconds, 5/3. But they really, what I like is that we're supposed to be getting some rain tomorrow.
Yes.
And so what's great about this field is that you have a lot of fillies that have proven themselves on the slop, have proven themselves over the 7 furlongs. So I will not, Skyway Sister at 5-1 for this distance, I'm not taking it. I'm a fan of the filly. I don't love her on a, if we get a sloppy track, I'm not going to love this filly on a sloppy track. Synergy's Electra. This one was against the Arnaud Delacour horse last time out. Liked what I saw in there. It was just, I always like one that can be professional and come from off the pace. So listen, this is going to be an interesting race once we get to the last 3/16 of it. You can't rule out Chickiness. I don't know if I'm going to have her in my picks. I just think she's a little bit on. I wasn't quite loving that last out effort in that optional 62.5. However, she was pressed to the lead. That's not her style at all. She likes to take a little bit of a calm, relaxed approach. So I think she's, especially because let's see, who's going to be the speed here? Possibly Angel Art for the Mark Schumann. Mark Schumann, 12-1 as of lately, 3 for 11 with the second time starters and 6 for 11 in the money. So He likes this. He was going to bet. I think before this one ran first time out. I think he didn't, but he likes that one. Like I said, there's a lot to offer. I don't have much to say, but yeah, Synergy's Electra at 12-1. Rousey Express at 15-1, especially with the blinkers on. The Arnaud Delacour, who's going to be 10-1, possibly lower than 10-1. Liquidator, depth underneath, third, fourth type of situation. Chickiness, you could go either way with that one just because this field is so dense. And the Hammy Smith horse, this one can handle an off track, just didn't quite get the trip last time out. So we've got Jayron Barbosa and they've two. Jayron Barbosa and Hammy Smith, on top of the fact that Jayron Barbosa is stealing our meat right now, but they're in particular hitting at a 24% clip together as of late. So let's see. Let me do the math really quick. Excuse me for a second. 12, 16. Yeah, 16 for 29 in the money with Gormley's Gabbert, with Hammy Smith and Jayron Barbosa. So, I mean, it's such a toss-up between this race, honestly, but I do go with the Rail Horse Malibu Moonshine on top.
There you go. All right. Well, it's a pair of nice stakes, $100,000 Maryland Juvenile Championships, and Callie will be watching, and haven't looked ahead at the rest of the schedule, but there's what happens between now and the end of the calendar year?
Nothing. The day after Christmas, the 26th, that is our Christmas tide stakes day. And I think we have about six. Let me look on the calendar real quick. I think we have about six races going on that day. So I will be going to Wisconsin. I will be in Wisconsin all week prior to that. But I will be there the day after Christmas to be there for that Christmas tide stakes day. Let's see. We've got the Dave's Friend, the Carousel, the Willa on the Move, the Heft, the Gin Talking, and the Robert T. Manfuso.
Very nice. Well, I'll be on vacation, so we won't.
Good for you.
We won't talk.
Bummer.
Yeah, we'll be off always off between Christmas and New Year's.
Okay, understandable.
Well, if we don't talk, Merry Christmas, and what is that crazy pastry in Wisconsin for Christmas? Right?
I mean, we have all kinds of crazy stuff in Wisconsin. No, it's hard to pick them apart.
There's a specific.
I'm not going to say it because I always say it wrong, and I can't even. I know what you're saying. I can't even remember. I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember the name because I always say it wrong.
you did grow up there.
I did, but I never ate those.
No.
But
the Thanksgiving pies.
We were a pastry family. Yeah, the Thanksgiving pies, yes. But yeah, we didn't grow up like a pastry family. We were strictly sugar and cheese. So,
somebody will absolutely answer us on Twitter what this thing, it's
perfect.
A Kringle.
Oh, yeah.
A Kringle, right?
Oh, well, okay, yeah,
that's sort of like a king cake. What king cake is to New Orleans, the Kringles are to Wisconsin.
Okay, yeah, I feel like I've completely brushed over that because now I'm thinking of something else completely different that's specifically in my northeastern Wisconsin area. But yes, Kringles, obvious go. Because that's such an immediate. I completely forgot about it.
Well, you've been away. You've been away from Wisconsin.
Because I don't think it's special because I'm so used to it.
Well, we think Cali's special. And there's no getting used to you. This is Cali Francois, everybody, and the action at Laurel Park. Merry Christmas. Have fun at home. And we will talk after the first of the year.
We will talk after the first year. Thank you so much for having me. To everybody here from Maryland Jockey Club, a very Merry Christmas and a happy holidays, and have a wonderful December despite the weather.
Cali Francois, everybody. Miss Francois, to you. We've got to take the bottom of the hour break, our only break of the morning. Dave Grenig is probably getting impatient. So we'll get to Dave. Very quickly, let's get a little bit of music in, and I'll slip in a couple of pieces of news. One thing we should note, there is a sale to be, speaking of Laurel, the Mid-Atlantic, we got that, the Horse of Racing Age, the mixed sale, the one-day sale, I think, is it Monday or Tuesday, we'll be in Arizona Monday, we'll be in Arizona tomorrow. But we'll come to you from Arizona Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I saw something, I think at Blood Horse. I guess Mrs. Generazio is going to be dispersing. And it doesn't say necessarily a total dispersal. I can't tell if she's getting rid of all the stock, or you know, if she's got a couple of runners that are that you know she'll continue to campaign. But boy, a great legacy that Frank and Mrs. Generazio fashioned, and I'll get the details. This will be in January at Keeneland. Generazio dispersal, and I mean what they were able to craft, especially you know when Frank actually stepped away from training, and then they were just breeding and having Jimmy Ryerson and Chris Clement train. They I mean, they had just a run of great success. So that, I mean, that's a jacket, that pink and green jacket. Yeah, hate to see that go away. So let's take the break. 90 minutes in, a little less than 90 to come. It's Twin Spires weekend preview at the races for a very good weekend. Dave Grenig, DRF Grenig. When we come back, Scully, Nick Tamaro, Rick Hammerly, and the face of GoTB, Mr. Canary in the Coal Mine himself, Eric Eaton the Cage, Seth Merrill. Back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? The University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and...